Chuck Shaden here on Those Were the Days from 97 FM, WNIB in Chicago. Won't you welcome, please, our very special guest, Mr. Art Hellyer. Art, welcome.
Thank you very much, Chuck. Nice to be here with you.
We're delighted that you came down this afternoon. You're putting in a long day. You've been on the air this morning since 9 o'clock out at WJOL in Joliet. And here you are, and none the worse for wear.
None the worse, thanks to you sending Larry out to pick me up.
Larry was delighted to come out that way. He's charging us 43 cents a mile, he said, per diem also.
Well, I will say this. We drove in at 90 to 100 miles an hour the entire way, and I do question that a bit. But he had his belt on.
He had his belt on.
Right.
And usually he has a belt before he takes off there. There's a few chicken feathers sticking out of your sport coat there.
Yeah, but he did sell the eggs across the street at the hospital.
Ah, that's right. Art, I'm so delighted that you've come down to be with us this afternoon on our program. It's a very special treat. I have admired your work ever since I can remember. I always listened to you when you were on the radio in Chicago, and I listen to you whenever I can when you're out in Joliet. And wherever you've been, I've certainly enjoyed that. And I was telling my wife this morning, I said, you know, I can't believe, I hear Art Hellyer is going to be a guest of mine on my radio show, and how much back it, my wife and I got married in 1956, and we used to listen to you every morning on WCFL.
Right, which is the loop now, yeah.
It's AM 1000, right?
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the fun we had, the creativity that you brought to radio was wonderful.
Well, I had an amazing record, Turner. If you'll recall, July 12th of 1988, you had us on WBBM, the 2 hours that Sunday night. And Lenny Kaye, I'm referring to, and of course he's gone now. But he anticipated anything I would do. Lenny was ready to fire voice tracks. I mean, now today, Chuck, as you well know, better than anyone, all the voice tracks are done by computer.
Around
back then, Lenny had 5 or 6 stacks of records, 78s, 45s, and 33s. And he'd wear white gloves so he could get right to them and handle them quickly. And I would say something like, my goodness, Mayor Daley just walked in here.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing I know, I'd see him whipping through records. He would cue right to a line, and I would say, and what has the good mayor to say today? And in would come a voice saying, you know what, you tell me, Chuck.
Well, he'd say anything.
Yeah, you know, there's no light in the men's
there's
room.
There's no light in the men's room.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, things like that. Or get a nickel back
get
on every
nickel
bottle.
Get a nickel back on every bottle, Jim. Yeah.
I think that's always been your favorite.
I love
but
those. Yeah.
Lenny had a, he was the most talented, most unusual individual I've ever known, and he was responsible, really, for the job we did, becoming number one in Chicago all those years.
Now, you were really not a disc jockey.
No.
In the purest sense of the word. You.
No.
You occasionally played some music, some
well,
records
I always
on the
used
show.
To say I would play music as a fill between commercials.
Well, that was one of the great things, actually. The success that you brought to radio was because of the listeners that you brought the sponsors, and the sponsors were there, and you had some very long-running sponsors.
Yes.
I mean, I'm
very
remember, like Downtown Nash, but yeah. You put them out, they went out of business.
They went out of business before I did. I'm still at it. They're long gone, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you had many long-running sponsors, and they stayed with you, and you would kid the sponsors, you would make fun of the sponsors, and program directors from one station after another had lost their hair and their wits. And their sense of humor.
Well, what did they know about radio?
Well, that's true. Program directors, right?
And managers. What do they know about radio, Chuck? Yeah.
I have a clip. Ted Schulte, one of your fans.
Well, Ted Schulte, I cannot tell you how many commercials I did for him. Kellogg's, Royal Crown Cola, Buster Brown Shoes, when he was with Leo Burnett.
Well, Ted made a tape of an appearance of yours at the Chicagoland Fair.
Really?
Back in 1957.
I'm not even aware of that.
You were doing you remember this, a remote from Navy Pier?
Oh, my. Oh. Do we have to go into that?
A remote from Navy. Can you remember that scene there?
Well, let me put it this way. I remember the week very well. And the date of my demise at WCFL was July 12, 1957, which was also the worst rainstorm, the date of the worst rainstorm in Chicago history. Mm-hmm. But July 12th of 1957, I hope he doesn't have that date. Is that the one you have, Mr. Schulte?
No,
we've been friends an awful long time. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to end here or not.
This is This is just circa 1957.
Okay.
I don't have a specific date. Ted works, volunteers, a lot of volunteer work here at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in the area, especially of oral histories.
Right.
And he knows now today the value of dates on things, see? But when he recorded this thing off the air, I guess it was in 1957, it was 1957 or so, but it probably...
Well, Friday, July 12, 1957 was my famous day at WCFL. This was the strange thing about that week. My show was on from 6 until 9:30 in the morning. The trade show opened at 10. Why was I doing my show out there every morning? Nobody was there.
No, you mean at Navy Pier?
Yeah.
No, you were doing... This was a Saturday night...
Okay, one Saturday
special.
Night
Saturday
we
night
did.
Saturday night special, yeah.
Yeah, and Hogan brought in... Marty Hogan was the general manager, and he stopped in. Do you have him on there? Because he had had a few.
Obviously telling you about it. He had a few people in his office to discuss the programming
right,
concept.
To discuss selling of the program, that sort of thing. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is, we're going to play just a few minutes of this, but
really?
You're going to hear that you have always, you have never failed to credit Lenny Kaye with doing such a good job for you. And this really almost takes a big spotlight and puts it right on Lenny Kaye, because this is typical Art Hellyer stuff from that period of time.
May I tell you how he was dressed also?
Lenny?
Yeah. I called him Dr. KTT, transcription technician. So as Dr. K, we got for him from my doctor out in Skokie. His name was Dr. Kokotek. Yeah, still out there, Dr. Kokotek. And we got one of his gowns and a stethoscope and the cap, and that's what he was wearing that night when he was operating the turntables on that Saturday night, Dr. K was. Really?
Well, this is...
Well, you have a picture in the Nostalgia Digest.
In the April-May issue of the Digest.
Where he's wearing
picture.
That outfit.
Oh, that's right. He does have that...
That same outfit.
That
was
gown,
our
so
finest broadcast studio, by the way,
that's
you
right.
have
it's
pictured
It's one
there.
Of the great, all-time great studios, right.
They were getting ready to build a toll road, and that was a condemned farm, and we found that that building on the condemned farm.
I want to get into this tape now. We're going to listen to Dr. K and Dr. H, Art Hellyer, broadcasting from Navy Pier during the Chicagoland Fair. And this is also gives you a great idea of Art and his great regard and respect for all his clients, the sponsors who have come to support what you've done over the years. Right?
Uh-oh.
Let's listen to Art Hellyer.
Hi, this is Art Hellyer, and we're doing something a little different out here. We're working out here at the Chicagoland Fair tonight. What's my the mic, Dad? Oh, is this one all right? And right now, I'm seated out here in Dr. K's dinghy, right off Navy Pier. Joe Simeon, Ed Simeon, Sally Simeon, Pete Simeon, they're all out here. We're out here at the Chicagoland Fair, and we don't have studio facilities, as the boys have been telling you that, but that is a misnomer. Actually, we have a boat just off the end of the pier, and we're working from that right now. When we came in here tonight, got a big kick out of the program. Don McCarty, have you seen the program they sell you when you come in for 35 cents?
Good, huh?
They gave it away at the Tribune 2 weeks ago. Did you see it? Did you see that program out there? They knock you over the head and take 35 cents from your pocket for a Chicagoland Fair program, and 2 weeks ago it came free with the Sunday Tribune. How'd that chicken get out here in the lake? Hey, in the first, we're supposed to be working. Is this one of your accounts, Jim Collins? Really? I never thought you'd be associated with one like this. I thought you had the high-class accounts on the station. A little surprised at you. We're working for People's Pontiac. They're good friends of mine, actually. Al Rosenstein and Bill Stone and Phil Berman, all the boys out there, Mr. Schneider out the west side, they're all real nice people. People's Pontiac did a lot of television for them, and Now they're just about going broke, so they're buying radio. It's 6 minutes past eight, and, we don't have the temperature out here, do we? It's the sort of thing we do in the morning. The White Sox won one this afternoon. The Sox won that ball game 5-1. Come to think of it, Dr. K, for you folks standing outside the studio here, this is Dr. K over here. Did you get a good look at it? That's Dr. K. Doctor, you have something for us? Couldn't hear it. John Kudelek, we have the station the worst engineer assigned to us, too, by the way, tonight.
Really?
Really, I don't know how that happened. Ordinarily, they're very nice to us. We have fellows like Ernie Notcher and Ted Swanson. But tonight we got John Kudelek for some strange reason. And we almost had Mike Cozy on the turntables, the station's worst turntable operator. But Dr. K is here with us. Doctor, do you have some nice music prepared for us tonight? You can speak, you know. You tell me what it is. We don't have a music sheet. We haven't planned anything at all. We're supposed to speak about People's Pontiac, and Collins will have a fit over there, I suppose, if I don't. People's Pontiac, the largest Pontiac sales center in Chicagoland, and whether Marv Gray is listening or not, I'm not going to read 8 or 10 commercials that long. Look at the length of these things. Look outside the window. That'd be a crime to have to listen to that much, wouldn't it? Would you people want to hear commercials that long? Throw them all away. There'll be no commercials at all for People's Pontiac tonight. Music! And here at Navy Pier at the Chicagoland Fair, friends, we have the WCFL dancing girls dancing for you now, back and forth on the stage in their lovely costumes. 89 girls, 88 costumes. Hi there, Adele.
Hi, boys. If you think you're so snappy, you'll make us feel bad.
WCFL dancing girls appearing here at Navy Pier. We're going to have Mr. Rosenstein drive in an automobile in just a moment. The gentleman who owns People's Pontiac. Don McCarty's on the telephone. I'm going to have to caution you, Don, that I'm doing the talking here, and you just wait till 9 o'clock when you're back on. You're on in what? Till 10:30 from out here at the pier, huh? How much did it cost to get in here?
90 cents.
90 cents. 90 cents. Cost us a lot of headaches to get in here tonight. Park the car. I would like to call Mr. David X. Myers. And Mr. Myers, would you please call the parking lot on Urin Street and tell them that I do have a monthly ticket and I am allowed to park in there. Had a big battle with them tonight. Dr. K. got picked up by the police coming in. Always. That was a terrible time with them. But we want to talk to you right now about People's Pontiac, tell you that a sales riot's going on over there because... Actually, they've turned People's Pontiac into just a tremendous opera. What's the phone ringing about? Where's that? Is that from Johnny again, Kudelek? He just likes to hear his name heard on the air. We'll mention Mrs. Collins, too. See, she smiled now. Oh, she's a pretty girl.
Maybe that was fine.
I can't hear it. Johnny, give me some more volume, will you? We're rehearsing, actually, for Wednesday night, and we'll be on.
Thank you, Mamie. That was fine. Fine.
Mamie? This is the Mamie Hellyer Show, friends, and we're here tonight. We're here ordinarily on weekday morning, 6:45 till 9:30 on WCFL. We want to tell you about the wonderful cars they have at People's Pontiac. 56 Pontiacs, as little as $1,495, full price right now. Any of you people out there drive a Pontiac? Do you? I don't know why anybody would want to, really, but if you are looking for a good deal on a Pontiac, then what you want?
I have to change the copy.
Don McCarty, this is our assistant program director, Don McCarty, here, and he's changing the copy. We have a message from Mr. Rosenstein right now.
This is Indiana's first broad chasing station,
WCFL Chicago, 1000 on your dial.
But these 56 Pontiacs are yours for, believe it or not, $1,495. Don't change any prices on me, Don. I'm already quoting them. And, friends, if you'll watch back here at the back of the booth now, Mr. Rosenstein, what's the matter here with the mic cord? Mr. Rosenstein, if you'll bring that car right in, this is a beautiful Pontiac he's bringing in. Mr. Rosenstein, bring that car right in, drive it right in here. That's it. Carefully, right through the studio. Watch it. Careful with the... Anybody out there like to buy a junky Pontiac? Give me the copy again. We'll find out what that is for. Mr. Rosenstein, I'm going to ask you, please, sir. He's doing it to the same car. Please don't do that to the 1956 Pontiac. This one was priced at $1,495. Anybody out there like to buy it? $35. People's Pontiac. As little as $1,495, full price of People's Pontiac right now, and a payment of $59.90 a month with no money down. That'll include hydromatic, radio and heater, white wall tires, two-tone styling. $59.90 a month, all interest and carrying charges included, too. People's, where more people pick Pontiac as their car. Two locations north. Yep, Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled Pontiacs. People's Pontiac, where more people pick Pontiac as their car. I see that on television. Stand there with a straight face and lie for these people. Say, more people pick Pontiacs at People's than any other place in the world. 3150 Ogden, corner Ogden and Kedzie, and then also 5940 Northwestern Avenue, right at the corner of Peterson. Open tomorrow, Sunday, all day. Open on Sunday, and I don't like that because I think car dealers should be closed all day on Sunday. I really do. The governor vetoed the bill, and somebody ought to veto the governor. The time is 8:13. Hmm? What's going on over here? Wally Matea, our custodian, is carrying his purse.
And be sure to listen next week when the topic of the sermon will be Cast Thy Broad Upon the Waters.
Yes, that's the topic of the sermon here on WCFL tomorrow. Would you like to repeat that for them? For a minute, I thought we were going to hear that horrible Jack Carey announcement for Arlington Park again. Carey produced that thing in his basement. Have you heard it? He wrote it. He sings on it. You've all heard Jack Carey, haven't you? Here's a program note.
And be sure to listen next week when the topic of the sermon will be Cast Thy Broad Upon the Waters. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
WCFL Chicago, 1000 on your dial. The time, 8:14. Does anybody know what the temperature is? It's doggone hot. It must be around 90.
We take you now to BBC in England.
Good evening, friends. We're speaking to you from BBC in London, England. This is Vic Barnes, WCFL's newscaster for London, England, bringing you this broadcast. And here she is, the Queen.
We have no respect for anyone.
I'll tell you, it's a shame you were so laid back, Art.
I've led a very quiet monastic life. I really have.
You know, the joy of listening to that, even a few years after the fact, was part of the joy of hearing it was the fun that you were obviously having doing it.
I thoroughly enjoyed
it. I mean, you were having a good time with it, and you were just running roughshod over everybody. But there was... You know, the thing about it, there was absolutely no malice in there.
No.
You were not angry at anybody. You were just having a good time, and you used all the resources that you had.
It was just malice in Wonderland. that's about what it was.
And, you know, describing Dr. K doing, finding all the records and doing
well,
the right thing.
Well, you got to hear it there. I had no idea Ted Schulte had found something like that. Yeah. And Ted, thank you very much. I got a big kick out of it. I had no idea anything like that was still around.
It's amazing. You have had a terrific career in radio. You've had the fight for what you wanted to do, and what you wanted to do was what you thought was the right thing, to entertain the audiences. And I know it's been over all the years. What was your first radio broadcast, Art?
January 1st, 1947.
1947.
Charleston, West Virginia. And it started out by the man who was the custodian the night before, a brand new radio station.
Uh-huh.
I was doing the first broadcast, 5 in the morning, 15-minute newscast. Waverly Graverly was the name of the custodian. And the night before, he had turned off the news machines. So I came in to start my shift, first time ever on the air. for the 15-minute newscast. There's no news. I had to run down the restaurant and buy the local paper. But later on in that day, Bob Gelder, the manager, called him at home. This is a New Year's Day. And asked Waverly Graverly why those news machines were off. And he said, well, somebody went home last night and left them running, so I turned them off. And no one ever turns off a news machine.
He was trying to do his good deed,
yeah,
right? And it was
yeah.
New Year's Eve. He figured that partying at the station, everybody decided to go home early or whatever and leave it on.
Right.
We're talking with our guest, Art Hellyer, who has honored us by coming downtown today to be with us in our Hall of Fame radio studio here at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We have lots more with Art Hellyer and lots of sounds, and we're going to get lots of good stories, I think, and we're going to talk about a very fascinating man and his career as we continue in just a bit. Chuck Shaden on Those Were the Days from 97 FM. This is WNIB in Chicago. Our guest is Art Hellyer this afternoon on our Those Were the Days program, and we're on a roll, so we're going to continue chatting with Art here. We have a few other things to do. But, you know, I have a feeling that this World War II program, This Is Our Enemy, I think we're going to put that on the shelf today. Now, don't worry, we'll reschedule it, and we will play it as part of our radio in World War II. But I'm going to take advantage of the fact that Art Hellyer is here this afternoon, and we're going to spend the rest of our show chatting with this guy and playing some of the sounds of the great broadcast that he provided. Art, when...
You have more of these?
I have more, Satan.
Where did you get
this?
These?
This is called the blackmail. You worked with an awful lot of people in Chicago over the years. You're talking about Jack Carey before. Now he was staff announcer at WCFL.
Yes, and he followed me each morning after my show. He was then on up until noon. Jack Carey, even today, is one of the big officers in AFTER.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, sure. He's the past president, mm-hmm. too. Yeah, sure.
So, and, of course, you worked with...
And one of the stuffiest guys I ever... No, that was 1957, wasn't it?
That's 57.
Right.
Well, now, what you were saying before, that you got bounced from WCFL in 1957.
July 12th.
Why?
I had gone to do my show that morning at Navy Pier, mm-hmm. the very show that Ted had from the preceding Saturday night. And we were doing the morning show, and as I said, I was off at 9:30. And the show didn't open till 10. I to this day, haven't figured out why I was doing my show there each morning. Well, Monday morning, I got in fine. They had called over and said I'd be there to do my show, told the guards.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or Monday, I didn't get in. I went back to the studio, walked back from Navy Pier to the old Furniture Mart where the studios were then. And then, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the guards were alerted to the fact we were indeed to be there to do our radio program. Well, Friday, they had the Monday staff on again. And they wouldn't let us in.
You mean on Monday morning when you showed up, they said, we have no authorization for you to be
exactly.
here. We're not going to let you in.
Exactly. No,
okay.
No way. So Monday I walked back to the studios, did the show from the studio. Well, Friday I thought, well, surely the Monday crew knows about it by now. Mm-hmm. So there was a bit of a discussion at the door. I didn't say altercation.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a discussion. I did get in. Some glass was broken. A couple of garbage cans were hurled. Just your usual morning show group coming to work, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't drink either, by the way. And I did get in, but the guard was standing there with a 1927 Thompson submachine gun. And he held that gun on my left shoulder. And he was from the First National Bank. They had $1 million display. Mm-hmm. And I walked the distance to our studio, Glaston area studio, with that Tommy gun on my left shoulder, and he stood there holding that gun on my shoulder as Ernie Notcher, the engineer, opened my mic and Lenny got ready to start throwing the voices mm-hmm. and noises and everything at me. And I made a few remarks about how he's standing there with his 1927 Thompson and that Bob Elson would be going over to the bank later in the day, and when he took his money out, it would fold. Just a few little things like that, you know, I mean, nothing serious. And, well, I got fired. No, here's what happened later in the day. I was doing commercials for Standard Oil that afternoon for the old Darcy agency. I was doing Standard Oil commercials and at Universal, and I got a call from Marty Hogan, the manager at WCFL. He said, "You get over here right now." And I said, "I can't. I'm doing commercials for Standard. Get over here. Get over here." And I said, "I can't come over now." I did go over there about 5 o'clock, and he was there. It was just starting to rain, by the way. And I got over there, and as I came into his office, he said, "You're going to record this announcement, a full apology for what happened this morning. It will run a number of times over the weekend before you come in here and do your show again Monday morning." And I said, "Well, I have to call my dad, who's my attorney." He put his hand on the phone. I've never forgotten it. He said, "You make this announcement, or you don't work here anymore." And I said, "I don't work here anymore." The following Monday, Dr. K and I were on WAIT. He followed right along. He could have stayed at CFL. Lenny came along with me. Yeah, he was really loyal. He was a great guy.
They didn't want to hear any your side of the story or anything?
Oh, no, no. That...
It really didn't have anything to do with the fact that the guard was holding his Tommy gun on you.
No.
What you had said.
No.
Well, who was upset?
Oh.
The bank? Did the bank say they
No, the bank was not upset. In fact, my dad was a friend. My dad was an attorney in Chicago for years, very well known. And dad talked to a man named Brown. Forget his first name now. He was president of the First National Bank, and he thought it was very funny. It was the ad agency that raised Holy Ned about it. And they weren't even on the station.
The ad agency for the bank?
Yeah, for First National Bank. And they weren't even on the station.
And it was actually, in a way, it was a plug.
Do you want to know who the ad agency was, too? Do I mention those? It was Foot, Cone, and Belding, by the way. They were just a small outfit, you know.
Well, they never made
right,
it.
Right, Ted Schulte? just a little
that kind of an attitude.
Yeah. It was not Homer
so
Hecker,
now, but. next Monday,
yeah,
over the weekend, you're on WAIT.
Yeah,
now,
how did you line
that up so fast?
Well, that night when I went home, I had my little 1952 MG, my red one. Ted Schulte remembers it.
Not a Pontiac.
You know, no. I've never owned a Pontiac. Come think of it. But I was driving that home. We didn't have expressways in those days. I was coming out Peterson. We lived in Skokie. Soakie, as I called it, because our basement always got it. October 10th, 1954, July 12th, 1957, and July 3rd, 1962. We had rainstorms that were unbelievable here in Chicagoland, and each time I'd get on the air, I'd refer to it as Soakie, Illinois, of course. And we got out of there the following week to the house we live in now, well away from there. But I was driving home, and it was raining badly. Mm-hmm. And that night, we had over $10,000 damage in a completely finished-off basement and everything.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, it was a terrible, terrible rainstorm. And the next morning, Elaine and I and it took us until the following November to get the place cleaned up. And here we are trying to get the thing cleaned up the next morning, and a police reporter shows up from the Chicago American. He's standing on our front porch, the police reporter, a little ferret. And he wants the complete story of what happened. And the American did run it. And
you mean what happened with the Navy Pier thing, right?
Right, the Navy Pier. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, a fellow named Bob Miller, I used to call him old BM on his station, and Bob Miller called me over the weekend and asked me if we'd like to go to work for him. So the following Monday morning, Lenny and I were working on WAIT, doing the same show over there that we had done on WCFL.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And it was the same hours?
Exactly.
Basically the same hours?
Exactly. Yeah. We enjoyed clobbering CFL. That was a great sport.
You never went back then to CFL anymore after
no,
that.
No.
And that was at the end of the Marty Hogan era for you. Right,
yeah. Marty died in March of 59. Yeah.
Now, you always used to kid Marty Hogan on the air about he was the general manager, right, or the program.
The day he hired me, he said, "Art, you have carte blanche. You are to do as you please." And I took him at his word, and I was in trouble with him all the time.
Well, you have had...
oh, boy, was I in trouble with him.
Over the years, you have always kind of locked in with the program directors and general managers of radio stations, because I think you have always had a feeling that these people did not respect your ability and have a great regard for your talent as an entertainer, and they were always part of the establishment, and they wanted to have a. They were very stuffy and bottom line oriented and all of that sort of thing, and had no sense of humor, right?
Well, you said it all. I can't add a thing.
Yeah. I mean, basically, that's the way you felt. And I know if you would make some statement on the air, or have made some statements on the air, and you could take a map of all the radio stations in Chicago and throw a dart at it, and it would land in the call letters of any radio station, and you probably repeated this scenario at these stations. You would say something on the air. And everything that you said on the air, none of it was in poor taste.
I never said one dirty word. Never I never used anything. One cuss word.
No, never anything like
ever.
That. Uh-uh. But you were just, you know, usually
nailing. I would denigrate management.
That's right.
I always felt that I had been placed on this earth to to puncture pomposity. I think that would explain it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they would tell you off the air.
And naturally, I would say, no, I won't.
Oh, that's
and
right.
You haven't even said anything yet.
That's
they
right.
Might have said. And I'd say, no way.
Well, I know, but sometimes they would say, Art, we don't want you to do this anymore because
so
it's
I
station
it.
Policy. But sometimes you would say, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. Okay.
Right.
And you won't do it. Then they come up with a memo underscoring what they said to you in person,
right.
verbally.
Right.
And then, of course, the next day,
read it
you'd read
musical,
the memo. Yeah.
And Lenny, Dr. K, would give me a musical background for it. Always.
And so then you would tell your listening audience, I am no longer able to say this or to talk about this. And of course, the audience then would be infuriated. That the first guy through the door, like a flash, would be Marty Hogan or some other station manager again, right?
Well, I've always said, now you say Marty Hogan. Mm-hmm. I started saying this is my 46th year in radio. I started saying this a good 40 years ago, that every station I've worked at, the people are the same people, they just have different names. Yeah, so when you say Marty Hogan, you might as well be saying any of the other ones, too.
Well, I don't mean to pick on Marty Hogan, but I know that...
Why not? He's gone.
Well, how long were you at WAIT, then?
We were there 57, 58, 59, and then I said over the air one day that... I said, Elaine, pack the kids up, we're going on a trip. I had a Volkswagen bus. Long before... Iacocca, who thinks he invented those things in 82, even thought of them. I had a Volkswagen bus of 56. I said, pack up everything. We're going to take a trip coast to coast with the kids and really let them see everything. And I announced that on my morning show. So I got home, and we packed up, and we just left. That was it. And
Well, had the station been given any notice on this that you were going to do that?
I said it on the air, didn't I? Didn't I say it on the air? What better notice is there? What better notice than saying it right on the air,
well,
Chuck?
Wasn't the program director listening to your every word?
Yes, and he was quite disturbed.
Oh. So this was his notice, and he felt it wasn't satisfactory, right?
Yeah, right.
So then you left?
Sure.
In a Huff or a Volkswagen?
Or went, not a Huff, although I have owned a couple Huffs. They are very nice.
No. Once you left in a Snit, yeah.
Yes, a 1932 Snit, beautiful automobile. Right, uh-huh. It had white walls.
So now you were on the road with Elaine and the family for how long?
62 days.
62 days.
And Elaine doesn't drive. I drive it all in a car that won't go over 55. Coast to coast.
So you saw the USA then?
Yes, not in our Chevrolet. Okay.
Then what, when you came back?
Oh, you won't believe this one. I worked one day in Buffalo, New York. You never heard this one, did you?
No. One day in Buffalo, New York.
An agent in New York who had heard me over the years contacted me, and he said, I've got a job for you at WBNY in Buffalo, New York.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Charlie so-and-so has heard your work, and he wants you. So I said, well, I was a dead duck in Chicago at that time. You know how
it
is.
Yeah, sure.
You're hot or you're cold, one or the other. You're never in between. So I remember, wait till I tell you how I got to Buffalo. I had pneumonia. And so I was just getting over pneumonia. This is March 19th, 1959. I drive my car over to O'Hare. I leave it at O'Hare. Howie Roberts, bless him, picked the car up and drove it back to the house for me. I then took Chicago Helicopter Airways to Midway, where I got aboard an American Airlines Convair. That then took off, and we got halfway to Detroit, and we're bouncing all over the sky, and here's the one stewardess on the thing. You don't call them. What do you call them now? Flight attendants.
Flight attendants.
I don't want to step on any toes.
Oh, now, for heaven forfend that you would step on anybody's toes.
The stew was stretched out in the front seat, and she was being quite ill from the storm we were in.
Mm-hmm.
We get over Detroit. We're told we can't land. They go to Cleveland. We're told we can't land there. Then we're told we're low on fuel. We're going to have to land in Cleveland. So we landed in this blizzard at Cleveland, and the first thing I see, the only thing I can see, is the yellow and red Shell truck outside the window. They're refueling it. The pilot and co-pilot get back on with a new hostess, and they explain we're now going to fly to Detroit. It's open, so they fly to Detroit. I got off at Detroit. I wasn't going to go through any more of this. I then had to take a Greyhound bus 19 miles to downtown Detroit, where I then walked to the railroad station. I caught the Wolverine, took it overnight, got in at 3 o'clock in the morning to Buffalo. Then my bags were out at the airport. I'd left them on American Airlines. I had to take a cab. The snow's this high in Buffalo. I had to take a cab. Then I had a reservation at the Hilton. I got back into the Hilton at 4:30, went up to my room. I was on the air at 6, took a nap for a half hour or so. Then I got on the air, and I saw the music was all rock. Well, I hadn't been told this. I apologize to your engineer and to the young people here. I hadn't been told that it was rock, and I don't play rock music. I don't play that. So I threw all the music out the window into the main street of downtown Buffalo. Chuck, you're getting a story out of me I've never told before. I threw all the records out into the street, and I had brought along a big case of my own records. And I put my own stuff on, and I had voice tracks that Lenny mm-hmm. had queued up for me, that had dubbed off for me. We didn't have tape then. They were on disc, the 12-inch mm-hmm. discs. Mm-hmm. So I'm using these voice tracks, and the manager, of course, saying the same lines that Mayor Daley would say and so on. So he calls in, and he's hollering and screaming at me and everything. I just kept hanging mm-hmm. up on him. I kept on doing my show. My show was to go 6 till 9. At 9 o'clock, I got out of there. I ran back to the Hilton a couple blocks. And I told the fellow at the desk, I will not take any phone calls till 4:30. No phone calls. I knew I was going to get fired. No phone calls till 4:30. Exactly at 4:30, I'm waking by the phone. Get over here as fast as you can. I was paid off, and I was on the New York Central coming home that night. One show in Buffalo. And I'll never forget what the manager told me. He said, you got away with far more than Jack Parr did, and I fired him, too. I'll never forget that.
He certainly had an ear for talent, didn't he? Well, now,
Chuck,
why?
Chuck, you do have a way of interviewing, don't you?
Why did you?
What?
What possessed you to, I mean, okay, you don't play rock.
The devil did it.
And you take your own music and you play that, or your own cuts and stuff.
I didn't like the
music. But why would you throw the stuff out on the street?
Why not get rid of it?
Well, I mean,
I didn't want it there contaminating my studio.
Somebody else is going to go on at 9 o'clock.
Well, that
what
was,
did that guy do?
Who knows? I was in bed back at the Hilton.
Art Hellyer is our wonderful guest this afternoon.
This is true confession.
Those were the days.
I never
we're getting
told
the
that
stuff
before.
Out.
You
That's
are a marvelous
great story. Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. You're certainly you're an idol of mine, I have to say. All right, we're gonna do some more some clips here from you. We have something we're back at WCFL now. Apparently, this was the only station you stayed long enough for them to record anything.
Well, can I say something real quickly here?
Sure.
Larry Peters just handed this to me, a note from a listener named Jim Dickinson, I believe it is. He says, tell them about WBBM and the hog belly prices. Well, I used to do a live show. You played it. You mm-hmm. you have a couple, the live half-hour shows I did with
with the Music Wagon or
Supper Club.
Supper Club.
Yeah, with the live orchestra and all. And this one night, they were 2 minutes short. So the producer runs into the studio to me, and he says, we're 2 minutes short. I said, I'll take care of it. So I ran down the hall to the newsroom, and I ripped off the first thing I could find on the news machine. And I went back, and for 2 minutes, I read hog belly prices and filled the time. I had forgotten that one. Thank you, Larry. I interrupted you, though. That was very rude of me.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I apologize.
I figured I haven't got it. I haven't made it in this business until you've interrupted me. And I thank you, too, Art, for all the plugs that you give this program and our store, Metro Golden Memories, on your WJOL radio show. You're very kind to talk about us.
It's a great program. I listen to this one. I listen to the one on WBBM every night. Mostly I fall asleep during it. But I
have a way with listeners.
No, it's not you. It's the hour they switched you to, which was very unfair in my opinion. They should not have done that, but that's the way radio stations operate. And to BBM.
Oh, no. This is WBBM's 25th anniversary as an all-news station.
I don't care about that either. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Now, look. Wait a minute.
Bowie.
I'm not throwing anything out the window here.
All these kids know at BBM is, this is our 25th anniversary. Bowie. It's the 70th anniversary. Since the Atlas brothers came up from Lincoln, Illinois and founded that wonderful
station. Well, it is the 70th anniversary.
It is, and they don't mention the great people, the Mal Belairs people, the Jim Conways, the Paul Gibsons, the Lee Phillips, the John Harringtons, all these people that made WBBM. Okay. Not this baloney. Okay. Anybody can sit there and read news. Anyone. I've done it. Anyone can sit there and read news. Big deal.
Well, it's
big deal.
Well, I have to say, I'm not going to argue with you on that.
Okay.
But I have to say that I do a weekend show on BBM.
I know, 8 until 10,
and
Saturday night
tonight,
and Sunday night.
Tonight,
I thoroughly enjoy that.
We're doing a program at 8 o'clock following the 25th anniversary celebration. But at 8 o'clock, we're going to do a program with five of the WBBM veterans, including Jim Conway and Mal Belairs and Tommy Bartlett and Billy Leach.
Tommy Bartlett is 79 years old this year.
That's right, yeah.
Because when we got together for the 65th, he said on the air he was 74.
Yeah.
Remember that?
That's right. He is.
He's 79
he is.
This year.
Anyway, so we're marking the 70th
Good.
Anniversary.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
And this may be the
They're
last
the important
program.
People.
absolutely. Art Hell, your broadcast now from 1955. Another thing from WCFL. This is, you had a lot of sponsors on this. You were, according to this, at this time, this is November the 14th. Of 1955, a bunch of sponsors, including Robert Hall and Crosstown Motors. You had a lot of automobile sponsors over the years, didn't you?
Yeah.
You were not really considered a spokesman for any one of them.
No.
But
no.
You always were irreverent to everyone.
Well, you see, I could not ethically take on more than one particular client. Ted Schulte can tell you. When I was doing Kellogg's, I wouldn't do Post or other cereals. And I did Kellogg's for years for Leo Burnett, as you know. But with those, that's why with the car dealers, for example, I would kid the daylights out of them because I really wasn't representing any of them. They had just bought time on my show.
And they were glad to be represented, I suppose.
Yeah, sure. Oh, one of them did take offense, so I won't tell you that story.
Oh, good.
My dad even bought an Oldsmobile from him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Why can't you tell us this
Well, his
story?
Name was Hollingsworth, and I called him Hogshead, and I didn't know he weighed 400 pounds. I hadn't met him. I did apologize to him.
Well, you're so laid back, Art. It's hard to get anything out of you here. We're struggling through this conversation.
It is a trial.
Would you like to do a station break for this?
Not particularly.
For this station. Why don't you give us an official station
All
break
right.
here.
Okay. You're listening to Chuck Shaden, Those Were the Days, WNIB 97 FM Chicago, and WNIZ Zion 97 FM.
That's very good.
Is that enough?
That's very good. You put me to shame.
You know what my
voice.
Fee is for that, by the way?
yeah, the fee.
That was a freebie.
Well, that I'm going to...
I'm honored that you asked me.
Oh, thank you. When we talked earlier on the phone, a little after 1 o'clock, you mentioned one of your sponsors, and I didn't charge you
it
for
It got out on
that,
your station.
That was on this station. I didn't.
Wow.
I wasn't going to put a charge
Who
in
was
for
the lucky devil?
can't remember now.
Oh.
You did a whole spot after we went off the air. Someone called and said after...
I'll bet it was Bailey's Carpeting.
That's what it was. Yeah, okay. Bailey's Carpeting.
Got another plug for it.
What? Bailey's Carpeting. Where is Bailey's Carpeting?
In Joliet.
Do they do cleaning or do they just
No, they sell carpeting and they supply dealers who build new homes within a 75-mile radius. Mm-hmm.
Is it cheap carpeting or is it good stuff?
It is excellent.
Oh.
Top quality. They are the carpet dealer. Yeah, they are.
When you do...
Now boy, they're going to get a bill from you now.
we get five more seconds out of this. It's $200. All right. I want you out there in Radio Land to listen some more to Art Hellyer here. This is, again, from WCFL, November the 14th of 1955. You're on the air at this time from 6:45 to 8:45 every morning.
Aren't those strange hours?
Strange
for a
hours,
show?
Yeah. You know, you think today most of the morning shows on radio are starting at 5 or 5:30,
right.
And
yep.
They're running till 10 o'clock.
Right.
See? And but back in 1955, I don't think too many people got such an early start.
No.
Or at least they weren't listening to the radio, or the radio people didn't think there was anybody out there at that hour to be listening.
Well, Marty
to the
Hogan
radio.
Used to tell me, mm-hmm. When you come on now at 6:45. He said, I want you to think of those people as being strictly blue-collar and have your commercials and your humor and your music slanted toward them. Then he said, around 8 o'clock, we get the carriage trade. And he said, look at it differently from 8 until...
And, of course, you did, right?
Naturally.
Okay, here's more of Art Hellyer.
The time is 7:15 here in Chicago, the temperature 39 degrees, clearing and colder today, partly cloudy and colder tonight, Tuesday cloudy with occasional rain, high today near 40, low tonight 30.
Yes,
high
that was spectacular.
I thought so.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You can perform that act for us every week, Billy.
Well, wait a minute, everything was going fine until you said, Billy, I honestly thought you were congratulating me. That you had enjoyed what we were doing till you called me Billy?
That was spectacular.
Oh, thanks a lot. I thought it was a little better than average, actually.
Congratulations.
Billy? Billy?
You can perform that act for us every week.
Wait a minute. Billy? The time is 7:15, the temperature 39 degrees. This is the Billy Hellyer Show. We're here every weekday morning from 6:45 till 8:45. I can hear somebody listening to this tape in London say, I thought you said your brother's name was Art. 7:15, why did he say his name is Billy? I have a sister in Ceylon.
I love you, yes, I do. I need you, yes, I do. From the way I looked at you, you love me, yes, you do. You need me, I need you. That's why I'm never blue since I first eyes on you. A loaf of bread, a glass of wine, and thou. I guess you knew it from the start, from the way you broke my heart. You're the one, boy, I'll always admire. Darling, you're my guiding star. I must be wherever you are. You set my world on fire. I need you, yes, I do. Must hug you, kiss you too.
7:13, temperature 39 degrees, high today near 40, low tonight 30, and the high Tuesday in the low 40s.
Why do you say that to your sister?
I didn't say anything to my sister other than the fact that she's leaving for London, England tonight, that she's going to live in England with her husband Philip and her two little boys, Philip and Gigi, and all I said was bon voyage.
My sister's a masseuse.
Really?
Really?
Oh, yes, indeedy. You know what might be a nice thing? To have a loaf of bread and a jug of wine and thou this morning. I think that'd be awfully nice.
Oh, have some more port.
Love to, thank you. The time, Southampton. 7:19 is the time. The temperature, 39 degrees. High today, 40. Low tonight, 30. High Tuesday, in the low 40s. Did I tell you earlier my sister is a masseuse? Really? Yes, a loaf of bread, a jug of wine, and thou, Marty Hogan.
A loaf of bread, a glass of wine, and thou.
Scoot out the door. Get in the car. Save on clothes, go out to Robert Hall. Go inside. You'll be amazed. All the style and quality in clothing for your family. Because of the low overhead, you save at Robert Hall.
Coats, coats, yes, and even more coats. Robert Hall features ladies' coats galore. Coats for every taste, coats for every size, coats all priced to save you more. And they range from $19.95
to $39.95.
Foy! Right now, at the height of the season, you'll find a Robert Hall tremendous collection of the very coat styles you've admired in all the fashion magazines. The new silhouettes, boxy and fitted, and the year-round zip coats in such luxury all-wool fabrics as chinchilla and fleece, cashmere wool blends, and...
So you wouldn't talk to me, eh, Hogan?
Why do you say that to your sister?
I didn't say it to my sister. I said it to Marty.
Only Robert Hall could bring you such a fabulous collection at such low, low prices.
I don't know.
From $19.95 to $39.95. 22 giant Robert Hall clothing sales rooms in Greater Chicago. For the location of the one nearest you, see your phone book. Robert Hall, open 9 to 9.
Monday through Saturday.
Monday through Saturday.
I said that, Hogue. The time is 7:21. The temperature 39. A moment ago, we heard from Helen Greco with I Love You, Yes I Do. And as we said, the temperature now is 39. Humidity 77. Oh, I feel those sneezes coming on again.
We were so broke we had to wear each other's clothing. It wasn't funny. I had 10 sisters.
I know, Marty. But as long as the dresses came from Robert Hall. Oh, I stifled that sneeze. Gesundheit to me. 7:21, the temperature 39 degrees. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here is a group I know you're going to enjoy listening to. In honor of my sister going to England, this is the London Philharmonic. And, of course, the London Philharmonic is world-renowned. It's directed by Sir Thomas Beecham, the world-renowned composer, conductor, and pill manufacturer. Ladies and gentlemen, Sir Thomas Beecham conducts the London Philharmonic.
My father was never home. He's always away with the boys. Drinking, drinking. I didn't know what to get him for Father's Day. I didn't know how to wrap up a saloon.
Tony boy, don't say no, here we go, off across the plains. Carry me, right away with you. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, whoa, my pony boy. There's room here for two deer, but after both ride back home, dear, as one on my pony from old Cheyenne. I'm picking.
she hopped up on her pony and ran away with Tony. If you see her, just let me know, and I'll meet you in San Antonio.
And that was Art Hellyer. Who was that on your Hellyer show from 1955?
That was Homer and Jethro. Yeah, we used to have them on live doing things, too. They were great. One of them lived in Evanston, Jethro, and Homer lived in Hammond. Remember?
And I didn't remember where they lived.
Yeah, they met halfway in between and performed.
Now, that was the ever-popular Marty Hogan was doing some of the commercials on that.
Marty Hogan did not only the commercials on his own radio station where he was manager. He represented Robert Hall nationally.
Oh, he did?
He was their announcer nationally, yeah. And he also worked the Cubs and White Sox ball games in those days for Geritol.
For Geritol?
Yeah, for
Sponsored
Geritol.
Cubs and...
Right, yeah. Yeah. Marty did a lot of work. He was a very well-known broadcaster.
Oh, he was not doing play-by-play or anything.
No.
He was just doing
strictly commercials. Right, I see.
Well, now, you were over at WAIT, and you left and you went to this one-day stand that you had where you threw the records out the window. And then what?
Some of them sailed nicely.
The 45s with a big hole in the middle.
The 45 with a big hole in the middle, you could get those to go up. Those would rise, yeah. Whereas the 33s and the 78s would go straight down. You know. But the 45s were great fun to hurl.
The 78s would actually break, too.
You'd do them with a sort of a frisbee cast.
Yeah.
That was great sport. After that, I went to work for Channel 7, and I stayed there for many years. Yeah, stayed at Channel 7. I did everything you can think of.
You did more or less straight stuff there, though, right?
Well, I had no choice.
Yeah.
You know, when they put copy in front of you saying, it's time for Monday Night Baseball, brought to you by, and you have to do it in 7 seconds and that sort of thing, as Ted Schulte very well remembers, you read it that way. Breaks would run anywhere from 3 to 7 to 9 to 12 to 13 seconds. And the intros, I did intros on Maverick, My Three Sons, The Real McCoys, 77 Sunset Strip, the Monday Night Football, Monday Night Baseball. I did those until they, they went to computer on that November 2nd of 79. I did those for 20 years.
Well, now, you say you introduced 77 Sunset Strip. Now, that came off the network, right?
Yeah.
What would you do to introduce it?
Oh, this is the interesting thing. Every program on ABC came out of Chicago in the late 50s and the early 60s. Did you know that? ABC TV. And you know why? If you were used to seeing My Three Sons at 7:30 on Thursday night in Chicago, you also saw it in Los Angeles and Seattle at 7:30. Local time, you saw it in Denver, 7:30, Miami, New York, at 7:30. We had 4 or 5 feeds going of every show. We fed everything to the ABC network on tape in those days. And we were paid very handsome fees. And New York suddenly realized that after about 4 years and decided they were going to put an end to it. Because they didn't want to spend the money they were spending, because they had to pay us for introducing all of these shows. But in so doing, it was an unusual approach way back then to allowing you, if you're used to watching TV shows at a certain time in your market, no matter where you go, you're going to see them at the same time. NBC just this past 6 months has been talking about doing that very same thing. Did you read that?
I didn't read that.
Yeah,
Having
all the shows start at the same time, local time.
Coast to coast.
Right. But we were feeding them all out of Chicago. And we had booths. We had H down the hall and next door to it, the two network booths. Then we had the local C booth back halfway down the building at 190 North State, where they still are, by the way. I would often do a network system cue to the West Coast in 3 seconds at, say, 827.42. Then at 827.47, I'd have to be next door in N to do another one. And then 10 seconds later, I had to be all the way down the hall to do the local.
Well, what would you say?
Whatever the copy was that I was to read.
And now here's some 77 Sunset
right.
Strip?
Brought to you by. And then that's where they had to pay us, brought to you by, when we mentioned the client. If we're just introducing a sustaining show, no. In fact, I used to have fun on Rocky and Bullwinkle. I would do the announcements in Rocky and Bullwinkle. When my kids would have birthdays, I'd throw them in coast to coast. My daughter Victoria, I remember that very well. Little girl, I remember saying, "Happy birthday, Vicky," and went right on in the spot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no holding you down, is there? There's no holding you back.
And when things would break down on the network, we'd get a call to go down and cover. I remember one night, Bewitched broke down. Remember that one?
Sure.
Bewitched broke down. So Richie Victor called me, the director, great guy. And he says, "Hey, Art, get down the hall." He said, "Bewitched is broken down." So I get down there. The mic is open when I run in. The light's on. So I just sat down at the mic, and I said, "Relax. It's not your $750 TV set. Samantha did it." I got a letter from ABC New York, a complimentary one.
Oh, yeah?
From ABC New York. And,
wow.
Yes, I did.
That's good.
A complimentary one. I remember the man who wrote it, I forget his name, said it was a beautiful retrieve was the way he put it. I'd never had anyone call to say I'd made a beautiful retrieve before or since, by the way.
Well, how many compliments have you gotten from station management over
None.
The years? Brickbats, but no bouquets,
right.
Huh? Is that it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's the truth, isn't it? It's real hard. You know, they seldom want to give you a pat on the back because they're afraid that what's the comeback going to be?
That's right.
I want more money, right?
Exactly.
But they're wrong.
Yeah. All I want to do is be left alone and do my show.
That's right.
Exactly.
We're having a lot of fun this afternoon with Art Hellyer, our very special guest here at the Museum of Broadcast Communications on our Those Were the Days program. If you would like to call in with a question for Art, we might have a few minutes for a few phone calls. You can give us a buzz at 312-629-6030. Give us a call, and maybe we can put a couple of phone calls on the air, and you can ask a question of our special guest, Art Hellyer, 629-6030. That's 312-629-6030. Chuck Shaden with Art Hellyer here on our Those Were the Days program from 97 FM. WNIB in Chicago. Art, we have a few folks on the phone. Would you like to say hello to somebody?
No.
No, okay. Hi, is this Pip? Are you on the air? Is this Pip? No, I'm sorry, this is Al.
Hi, Chuck.
Al, I'm sorry. Al who?
Al Parker, Chuck, your old friend.
Al Parker.
Who?
Ask Hellyer, Chuck. Art,
you're talking to Art right now.
Chuck, hey. Ask him if he remembers the...
Dr. Zablonsky.
No, never mind Dr. Zablonsky.
Come on, do Dr. Zablonsky.
Only if I get paid, Art.
Yeah, I know you.
Art, tell Chuck and the vast folks in Radioland...
The vast
...about
folks.
Having a dinner with Tom Racine at Berghoff's, and tell him what happened when you didn't get your baked potato. Because if you don't, I'll tell the story.
Well, you better tell it, because I really don't remember that one, Mr. Parker.
Oh, aren't you the memory that doesn't forget when it rained on March 15th, 1812? You know the weather when Lincoln was assassinated? You know what happened when Queen Elizabeth was given her crown? What was the weather like in London that day, Art?
Foggy.
Okay, I know the story, and I'll tell it, but I have to clean it up.
Tom Please
Racine,
do.
Who was a very successful Chicago announcer, always reminded me of Dave Garraway, to
yeah,
some degree.
Very
right,
much,
Art?
Very much so, yeah.
You guys were having dinner at Berghoff's, and as we all know, Berghoff's has the first liquor license in Chicago and the first waiters in Chicago.
Yeah.
Many of them, thanks to taxidermy, are still there. Anyhow, this tough guy comes over to the table. It's very crowded, very busy. And he says, yeah. He says, what are you going to have? And Racine ordered his dinner, and Art ordered his dinner. And part of his dinner was a baked potato. And a few minutes later, the waiter came back. And, of course, there's a ton of people there. And the waiter says, we ain't got no more baked potatoes. Well, Art, who has somewhat of a short temper, do you, Art?
No.
Said, what do you mean you don't have a baked potato? I want a baked potato, you blank blank, beep beep. And the waiter did not take kindly to this, and a few minutes later, the manager came over and said, gentlemen, gentlemen, this is what seems to be the problem. Now, while this is going on, there's a little lady, probably from Oak Park or Lake Forest, with her Montgomery Ward black straw hat, eating a celery steak, minding her own business. And as soon as Art started getting uncomfortable about this, she put her hand up to her eyes to shield her eyes and said, oh, my, every time Art uttered a colorful word. The manager came over and said, gentlemen, what seems to be the problem? And Art said, this blankety blank won't give me my baked potato. And the manager said, well, sir, I'm sure there's a misunderstanding, and why don't I get back to the kitchen and see what's going on? So we switched to the little old lady saying, why my, very upset. 10 minutes, 15 minutes go by, the manager comes back and says, I can't believe this, gentlemen. He says, we have had bigger crowds than this in the past. I've seen this happen many times where we've had perhaps 50, 100 more people. We've always had baked potatoes. And Art said, you mean? And he says, yes. He says, we really are out of baked potatoes. Shift to the old lady, and she's saying, oh, my, oh, my. And I think by that time, half the restaurant had turned around. It loses a little bit of its flavor because I can't use the appropriate word.
Al, do you remember the night we went to Binion's for dinner?
Well, I was hoping you'd tell that one.
Remember that?
Yes.
We went there one night.
Wait a minute.
Night.
Now you guys are telling dinner stories?
Well, wait a second.
By the way, what program
well,
is
hold
this?
It. Just a moment.
Those were the dinners.
To put this into the proper context, we're both staff announcers at Channel 7 ABC.
Okay.
Right.
And we would go out to dinner together. And one night it would be Binion's, another night it would be Berghoff's. And we went to Binion's, and here's the crowd all the way down into Plymouth Court. Right, Al?
Right.
So we go upstairs as though we belong there. And it turns out that it's a national group, a big electronics firm. So I introduced myself as the president of the electronics firm.
And everybody went for it. And you looked every inch the president.
And they did go for it. And you were Izzy Austin, the vice president.
I was Izzy.
You remember?
Somehow ethnicity worked.
We had beautiful.
I don't know why, but I was Izzy.
We had beautiful steaks. I made a speech, and we got out of there and went back to work.
And for as far as we know, this is the first time they have found out the truth. 30 years later.
I know. 30 years later, they found out the truth.
I don't want to monopolize your program.
Yeah, listen.
Me. I just want to say, if I may, Chuck, that, and I'm sure your audience would agree, that Art Hellyer, and as a professional broadcaster who's been at this about as long as Art Hellyer has, I would like to say that I have never known a more talented or more charming man than Art Hellyer. He is the consummate broadcaster. Always has been, always will be.
Thank you, Al.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Al Parker.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Al. Bye-bye.
Now,
nice
Al Parker is, as he said, and as we know, is a very fine broadcaster in the he didn't say he was a fine broadcaster, but he is a broadcaster in the Chicago area, and he's with Columbia College now. He's in charge of the radio department.
He is dean of the radio department. He has taught at Columbia College since 1949. Did you know that?
A long time.
And is the dean of the radio department.
And you worked at Columbia for a while.
For many years, and you did too.
I had a chance to do a few little things now and then. Yeah, it was great.
I enjoyed working with him.
Art Hellyer is our guest this afternoon. We do have another caller on the line, and let's go to this line and say hello to Pip. Is this Pip now?
Hello, Chuck?
Yeah, Pip. What is Pip?
Okay. How you doing?
What is Pip? Is that your first name or last
name? My first name.
And what's your last name, Pip?
Pip Cooper.
Pip Cooper?
Right.
Okay, you got a question for Art Hellyer?
I was kind of wondering when he went off the air in the Chicago area. Because I really enjoyed his spiel there so far. It's very entertaining. He's a very entertaining person. And I see some of the people that I looked upon here in the Chicago area, like Larry Lujack, who were kind of irreverent in the same way. And I wonder, maybe they must have taken lessons from him. Certainly a lot of people could today.
Thank you.
Pip, I would say that a lot of people who are on the air now or who have been on the air in Chicago took lessons from Art Hellyer, but they didn't learn everything he had to teach. I would say that. Would you say that, Art?
Thank you. To answer the man's question, on September 17th, a Sunday night, 1983, I was on WJJD in those days on Saturday and Sunday night, 6 till midnight. At about 5 minutes to nine, I took a vow never to come into the city of Chicago again, and that was it. And I have come in twice, June 12, 1988, to be on WBBM with Chuck, and today to be on WNIB with Chuck.
And I'm honored and grateful that you do that.
Well, I just think that you know, it's very rare to find that kind of exuberance or whatever. I don't know what you would term it, but I really enjoyed very much, so far what's been going on, and I'm going to enjoy the rest of the show this afternoon because I'm going to hang up and listen in.
We're not going to let you.
Well, I've got work to do. And Chuck, I don't know if you remember or not, but I've been doing a lot of stuff. I've told you before that I did my roof listening to this afternoon program, and I'm in the middle of drywalling right now, and it really, I'm telling you, it makes my work enjoyable to listen to you. There is no other compliment. I mean, I look forward to Saturday afternoon because, you know, it's the one time I can put the radio on and get up on the ladder. No matter what happens, I'm going to enjoy what I'm doing.
Don't you wish radio was like this all the time?
Well,
I do.
I listen to radio probably 16 hours a day. I listen to shortwave when I work at work, my regular job. And, I listen to a panoply of BBC, Radio Australia, you name it. And I really enjoy it. It's a very important part of my life. And we don't have a TV. So
That's interesting.
I guess I must be an auditory person.
What type of radio do you use?
Well, I have, you would ask, I have three or four different kinds of radios. And I've got a Panasonic and a Sony. I've got you guys on the Sony right now, which is kind of beaten up. But I'm getting a new one.
What do you use for DX?
Well, I'm not really, I don't really have a base station. What I use is I have a Sony, an old one. It's about 8 years old. It's an ICF 7600.
Yeah.
And it's very small, very portable.
Right.
It's a PLL. You dial up the frequency.
Right.
And it stays there pretty good. And it's pretty sensitive. I have a Panasonic. I don't remember the model on it, but it's a bigger model, and it's like in the kitchen. You know, it's a kitchen table.
Do you know what I DX on? A Hallicrafters.
Well, yeah. I wish I could get a Hallicrafters.
How do you like that? Well, my dad was their attorney.
And I guess you'd get a good set.
I've got a 42 and a 62.
I'm going to tell you right now. I envy you. I'm looking for a Grundig International 650 as a base station right now.
Great radio.
And I wish I had something better because I listen to Radio Finland in the morning, and it's very difficult to get the transmission. And it's just part of, for me, it's part of my day is to listen, to the radio and put it on and stuff. And the only problem with the Hallicraft is it has a tendency to drift.
They do.
And when you're on the ladder and you're full of muck and you can't get down and change the thing, it's a problem.
Well, don't drift when you're on the ladder.
No.
No. But that's why I'm really, the PLL, the technology for the phase lock tuning has really been a big thing for me.
Listen, Pip, thanks very much for your call, and I appreciate your kind words, too. That's your words about our show makes our job pleasant.
Well, Chuck, I'm one of these guys, I work at night, so I listen to your program at night, Monday through Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And the hardest problem I have is staying up between the hours of 8 and 10 on the weekend to catch it.
Oh. That's a switch. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Chuck Shaden and Art Hellyer here on our Those Were the Days program this afternoon on 97 FM, WNIB in Chicago, WNIZ in Zion. Let's go to the phones. And hello, Mary. You're on the air.
Oh, hello, Chuck. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Where are you calling from, Mary?
I'm calling from Villa Park.
Villa Park. And
I'm
a long-term
subscriber to your Nostalgia Digest. I love your program.
Thank you.
And I love you for bringing Art Hellyer back to us.
Well, thank you.
That was just wonderful.
You have a question for Art?
Yes. Well, I have a request.
Okay.
There's
leave.
One word that would make me supremely happy if he would say it.
What word is that?
Dynaflop.
Oh, yes, the Dynaflop. Buick with a Dynaflop and two doors cleverly hinged to each side.
I just never forgot that word. I was quite a little bit younger when you used that
word. Yeah, that was 1950.
Wasn't that long ago?
That was 1950, dear. Yeah.
Oh, for goodness.
I grew up in Elmhurst, not far from you.
Oh, well, I've lived in Villa Park and Lombard, and I get to Elmhurst quite frequently.
Yeah.
Well, you always gain a lot of like strange things to the automobiles. Buick with the Dynaflop, and to, you used to say a car with, and I love this too, car with a radio, Gabriel heater, and asthmatic. Right?
Mm-hmm. Another thing
there,
I did.
There were just tons of, we could write a dictionary just for aneurysms.
Thank you, Mary. What I used to do too was take one of these tall metal waste baskets, pour all the junk out on the floor, and then drop the microphone down into the bottom of that empty metal wastebasket and say, I'm speaking to you from the glove box of...
How wonderful.
And, it gave it a great sound, yeah.
You must love your work. You must just love this work.
I've always loved the challenge of it, we'll put it that way, yeah.
And I was surprised to hear you mention Paul Gibson. It's been so long since I thought of Paul Gibson.
Wasn't he a great talent?
Oh, he was terrific.
Nobody like him. Did you know that he only went through sophomore year in high school?
Really?
And I remember when I worked at BBM, I introduced him one day. Uh-huh. He'd be on from 105 to 150, if you'll recall, each day. And I introduced him one day, and he had his two little file cards. That's all he ever had. Two file cards, and he would ad-lib the whole program from two little file cards.
He must have read intensively.
Oh, he did. And I introduced him, and I said, here's Paul Gibson. You know, he'd been married a few times. Mm-hmm. And I said, now here's Paul Gibson. I said, Paul, I saw you at the Chez Paris last night. Now, were you at table number 5 with wife number 4, or was that table number 4 with wife number 5? You know what Paul did? He tore up those two cards, and he devoted the entire show to what I had said.
Oh, for goodness.
The most brilliant.
The only wife's name that I remember is Glenna.
Yeah, Glenna was one of them.
Was she,
she was one
the last one, or?
I'll tell you the type of people I've worked for over the years. I was doing Paul's show the Saturday in November that he died in 1965. And in those days, there was no switchboard operator at BBM on Saturday afternoon. We would get the phone calls in the studio. I answered the phone, and it was Northwestern Hospital calling, and a nurse said, is this somebody in the office there? I said, well, there is nobody. He said, well, I have to inform you that Paul Gibson just passed away.
Oh.
Well, I called the program director, and he says, good, now I don't have to fire him.
Oh,
gee.
They loved him there, huh?
I will not give the program director's name.
No, I would never mention his name.
He's known by the people who are in radio here in this room.
This is just marvelous. I didn't know until I caught word of this in the Nostalgia Digest that you were even in the area.
Yeah, I do a little thing every Saturday morning out at JOL in Joliet from 9 until 2.
Yes,
1340 a.m. Right?
Right, and they let me do my thing and leave me alone, and that's the way I want it.
Well, I have to see if I can pick you up here.
You can. I hear from people in Elmhurst and Villa
Park.
Paul Albert.
Hey, I've only got 5 radios in my 4 rooms.
Paul Albert's a regular listener of mine. 5 okay.
Uh-huh. Mary, thanks very much for checking in with us.
You're welcome.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A lot of fans out there, Art. A lot of people who love you and love the things that you've done over the years. And so many things that you did that you've said on the radio made a great impression on so many people over the years.
Gene Jansen's listening today. I see him on Channel 11 a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted me to tell about the day I left JJD. Well, I told that a little while ago. Then there's a Marilyn. She remembers my Memory Lane show over at WOPA.
Oh, yeah.
Chuck, those were the years I was on OPA from 8 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, 6 days a week, and also worked a 45-hour week at Channel 7.
Oh, my gosh. How could you do that? I mean, how could you physically
do that?
John
Russell Greist has that written up in his book, Valley Voices.
Right.
You have Valley Voices
of
at
course,
the store.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an excellent book. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did 8 until 4, 6 days a week at WOPA. And then I did a 45-hour week also at ABC at Channel 7. And I still went to Minneapolis, too, on Monday night to do the commercials for National TV.
You went Monday night to Minneapolis?
Uh-huh.
Did you take the Empire Builder up there?
Yes, I did, frankly.
Train?
I took the train, and then the next day I'd fly back because I was back at Channel 7 to work. Yeah.
Got a few more calls
here.
Okay,
fine.
We're going to get to them in just a moment. I want to mention this is 97 FM, WNIB in Chicago. And we have Art Hellyer with us this afternoon. And Art, you spent a number of years with the Satellite Music Network, and you were heard all over the country then on that station, weren't you?
You know,
kind of
that's
a super station. Though.
You know, Don Lucky taught that at Columbia College when you and I were teaching there. And I had not yet gone to work. for a satellite at that time. And I was always amazed at what he was teaching them. And then when I got out there and saw the way a satellite operates, it's the most unbelievable operation mm-hmm. I've ever seen.
Well, isn't it a coincidence that Don Lucky is on the line with
You're
us
kidding.
Now? He was here just a couple of weeks ago when we did our WLTD reunion, and he is here
he's
now.
Good. He's a good
Hi,
guy.
Don.
Hello.
Hey, Don.
Good to talk to you again.
Hey, Donald.
Yes, sir.
Will you send me a copy of your blues?
St. James Infirmary.
Greatest job I ever heard. I'd like to play
Thank
it.
Thank you. Virginia was telling me she wanted that.
Right.
But I just wanted to call up because, as I said, as I told Chuck before, last time I was there, I said, you know, the guy that really motivated me, I mean, when I heard Arzel, he was the wackiest, most creative, genius kind of guy I've ever heard in my life. And I was a young guy. And as I heard, you were in business 46 years.
Yeah, all right.
And I've got like my 36, so it was about 10 years behind you.
Mm-hmm.
But you just flipped me out. I think that was the thing. I know that was the thing that motivated me to get into radio in the first place. So I don't know whether to kiss you or hit you.
Well, knowing radio, I'll agree with you when you make that statement, Don.
But you know, there's so many things. As you said, the first time I met you, I went down. I called up and I was just flipped out by your program. And I came down to see you and Dr. K at WAIT. And that was the first time I met you. And then the next time was a long time after. It was Columbia College.
Right, yeah.
And then we were teaching together. And I just was just, you know, absolutely thrilled to meet you. Because I think there's no doubt you were the best, period, the most creative guy in this business.
Thank you, Don.
Now, you really are something. Although, as I said, I've been in management a long time, and you are just an absolute headache to anybody. it's impossible to deal with you. And the guy that came after you was also kind of a wacko, unbelievably creative guy, was Dan Sorkin.
Yeah, I know.
A little different kind of a thing, but, I mean, yours was, and you have a communication thing with an audience that very few people in the whole world have got. Arthur Godfrey was one, and I think you probably had the other. And also Howard Miller had that kind of a communication thing. That's just you grab an audience, and they just they will go to revolt with you. You know, they have.
Yes, I do have a revolting audience.
Yes, but, and it's funny thing, too, is that Al Parker called up, and he was the guy that was my instructor at Columbia College when I was going there.
That's right, he was.
Back in the, I didn't get out of there in 60, but I guess you're both kind of outskirts personalities now because you're out in Joliet and I'm in Harvey. So.
And you're playing jazz every day now.
That's right. Yeah.
He's on, Don is on WBEE out there.
1570.
Mm-hmm. And Marty Faye spot, actually.
That's right. I'm the regenerated Marty Faye.
You're the new improved Marty Faye from the 90s?
I don't know if it's improved. But he was a colorful character too. But as I said, I don't think there's anybody that I've ever heard. I haven't been every place in the country, but I don't think that anybody could really top Art Hillier for creativity and wackiness. And I certainly appreciate, you know, knowing him and also giving a chance to listen to him all the time as I did.
Don, how nice of you to call and say that.
Pleasure.
Thanks very much.
I'll get off this guy's get out. But,
Thanks.
Hey,
bye.
And stay in touch and get me a copy of that. I want to play it.
I will.
Okay.
Thanks, Art.
Okay.
See you.
Thanks, Don. Don Lucky checking in. Art, it's a tribute to you that broadcasters are calling in this afternoon to say how much they respect your work and what you've done and admire you in all of that sort of thing. I think it's wonderful that happens. I mean, it's one thing to have the audience call in. We know the audience loves Art Hillier. I mean, you talk on WJOL in Joliet, and people move, and they are responsive, and they do things. And you have a magic about you, as Don was saying. And it's because of the work that you do that you love so much. You say, I don't want to be encumbered by the mechanics of the administration of radio. I want to do this thing, and I'm here to do my job between me and the listener out there, right?
And I know what I'm doing. Leave me alone.
That's right. That's right. 97 FM WNIB in Chicago. Chuck Shaden on Those Were the Days. Art Hillier is our guest. And on the line now we have Larry. Hello, Larry. Hello, Larry. You there? I lost it.
Hello?
Hello, Larry. There you are. Sorry.
This is Larry Farfenugelster. And I just wanted to say that the best show I ever heard Art Hillier do was called Breakfast with the Hilliers, and it was on WEAW. And if I recall, it's possible that the milkman that stopped by the house is rumored to have been Bob Conrad, but I don't know if that's true. And if my dad hasn't figured out yet, this is his son.
I'm well aware of that. Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Fine. How are you? You've
got fans in the family,
yeah.
too, right?
Hey, the only other thing I wanted to say, and I'll get off and you can talk to more important people, is that you kind of sounded a little bit negative about WBBM earlier, and I happen to know that my dad is a faithful listener of WBBM.
That is true. I listen to WBBM all the time.
Right. So I just wanted to set that record straight, and I'll see you tomorrow for Mother's Day.
You surely will.
Okay, you're going to see your father for Mother's Day tomorrow.
Right. That's right.
Okay. Thanks, Larry.
Sure.
Thank
bye.
You, Larry.
Okay.
And by the
nice?
Way, on that show that he's talking about, Elaine, my wife, mm-hmm. did the show with me, and it's pictured in
There's
your
another photo
digest.
Of that in the digest,
right.
in April, May issue.
Right, yeah.
A lot of friends of Art Hellyer out there in Radio Land, including Marilyn. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, Art.
Where are you calling from, Marilyn?
I'm calling from Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and this goes back to the days when you were on WOPA in Memory Lane,
mm-hmm.
and I have to tell you, you were a part of our life. I mean, and the greatest thing was that you were on 8 hours every day.
Yes, I was.
And you just leave us with so many wonderful memories. By the way, Art.
Yes, ma'am.
How many did Dunn do?
That was
you never did answer that one.
That was the Irene Dunn movie thing, wasn't it?
That was that. Yeah.
How many did Dunn do? Yeah.
And you'd have a whole little routine. Did Dunn do?
What a memory you have, Marilyn. Thank you very much.
And when she did them, was she done with them?
Well, we never did find that out.
No.
Now, here's one thing, and I'm not going to tell you the answer to this. You're going to think about this for a week.
Okay.
Do you remember anything to do with the song, Please Release Me? Engelbert Humperdinck.
No.
Okay.
No.
Someday I'll give you the answer to that one.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks, Marilyn.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See, now wait a minute. You were on WOPA for 8 hours a day. What were you doing for 8 hours a day before you went down to ABC at night, right?
Here's the way it was done. I was on 8 until 4, Monday through Saturday. Let's say Monday morning I was on 8 till noon, but we taped it also. Then I jumped in the car and shot downtown because I had to be at WLS-TV at 12:30 for my nine-hour shift there. The afternoon for that Monday was last Friday's four-hour live show that had been taped. Then the Monday morning that I had taped, when I came in Tuesday, now Tuesday I was on, Wednesday I was on overnight at Channel 7. So I couldn't do 8 till noon. I would do noon till 4. 8 to noon would be the preceding Tuesday, 4 hour from the afternoon.
So then you were really...
I did 4 hours live each day. Now, Saturday, Thursday was no problem because that was my day off at Channel 7.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have the late night news every night in those years, too, on camera, Channel 7. I anchored that. Yeah.
Did you...
And in those days, we didn't have a weather person or we didn't have a sports person. I did it
on the
all.
News, on the TV
right.
news.
I did it all.
But on OPA, did you were being kind of generic then, right? You were not giving time and temperature and stuff like that?
Believe it or not, I must have been a satellite type operation because I would say 10 after the hour or 20 after the hour, as you do on a satellite operation. Because in satellites, you're in six time zones. You can't give the time.
Yeah.
But I would say 10 after or 20 after. Weather, no. No, I would not give the weather. That would come up on the newscast. So,
someone that you worked with on the Satellite Music Network and, of course, a colleague of yours over the years.
You
here
sound
in
like
Chicago.
Ralph Edwards.
Well, yes, sir. This is your life, Art Hellyer. Yeah.
It's me, Art. I'm right in the back.
I'm talking about Eddie Hubbard.
Yeah.
And Eddie's doing a Satellite Music
in Dallas.
Network out of Dallas.
Yeah,
Eddie's coming,
they moved to Dallas.
He's coming to, and that his the Satellite Music Network is now being heard on WAIT in Crystal Lake.
Exactly.
And Eddie is coming to Chicago next week, and he's going to be broadcasting his show live from the Museum of Broadcast Communications, right, this very studio.
Really?
Monday through Friday of next week. I think it's from 2 o'clock in the afternoon until 8 from here. Is that his shift? Is it a 6 hour or 2 to?
I believe he's 4 to 8.
All right, maybe 4 to 8.
Because
be Chicago 4 to 8.
Let's see. The shifts go 6 to 9, 9 till noon, noon till 4, 4 to 8, 8 till midnight, and then midnight till 6. Yeah, so I believe it would be 4 to 8 at night. Yeah.
Well, anyway,
that's interesting.
He'll be here live doing his show from here.
That's fine.
He does the browsers thing on Saturday mornings, and he's going to do a browser show next Saturday.
Very good.
With the browsers from 11 to 12.
Right.
And of course, they'll leave the studio in a shambles.
This will be the first time.
We'll have to get everything together again.
If you'll pardon me for interrupting, this will be the first time the browsers will have enough room in a studio.
Oh, that's right.
This
yeah.
is a beautiful big studio. When we did it at they did it at JJD, they all smoked cigars. It would just kill it would just kill me to follow them there. And then they would follow me at Satellite, and they'd all crowd into the studio as I was ending my show, and there was no way I could get by them and their cigars. they're going to enjoy the studio.
No smoking in here, so they won't be able to do that.
Plus the size of it. They'll love this, yeah.
All right, we have another – I want to play another clip from this broadcast on WCFL from November the 14th of 1955. Here's Art Hellyer on the air back in those great morning days of radio.
Actually, for our British listeners here, there are a number of people who will be listening to this tape over in England. We're supposed to play 3 commercials in the Robert Hall portion of the program, but we don't have time this morning, so we just chuck out the 3rd one and forget all about it. And sure, we hear about it. We don't much care. The time is 24 and a half minutes past 7, and the temperature is 39 degrees. High today near 40, low tonight 30. High Tuesday in the low 40s. Just going to be cloudy and colder today and tonight. That does it for Robert Hall on the Art Hellyer Show, that being me. Remember our big contest, 50 words or less. We'd like you to write a commercial on any one of the sponsors here in our program, and just write any sort of a commercial at all, whether it be humorous or serious, whatever it might be. We're going to read a lot of them in conjunction with the clients next week. And then next Monday morning, we'll announce the winner of the Webcore 3-speed Phone-A-Giraffe, the model 1612 Pixie. And all you have to do is send that to the Art Hellyer Show, WCFL Chicago 11. Decision of the judges final. All commercials become the property of the Art Hellyer Show, and the contest closes noon on Friday.
I've got nothing to do and nowhere to go.
Pardon me. Oh, no. This is WCFL in Chicago.
Hi, this is Don McCarty, requesting that you stay tuned to WCFL in Chicago. I'll be bringing you recorded music at 12:15 and again at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Interspersed between the commercials, you'll hear a little music on the Don McCarty Show. Hey, have you sent for your sample of White House Cleaner yet? Well, all you have to do is write your name and address on a postcard and mail to White House Cleaner, West Court Place, Chicago 6, Illinois. And the White House Cleaner is the finest cleaner you'll find on the market today anywhere in the country. I'll guarantee that. Oh, brother. I'm going to scrub my throat today with White House Cleaner. See if I can get rid of this. Now, you can prove in your own home that White House Cleaner takes all work out of washing painted walls and woodwork, upholstery, carpets, silks, woolens, cashmere sweaters, no matter what it might be. Just write your name and address on a postcard and send it to White House Cleaner, West Court Place, Chicago 6, Illinois. We'll send you a big...
What's the name of it?
White House Cleaner. We'll send you a big, generous sample of it for your very own home.
He did it again.
Yeah, I did it again, the White House Cleaner spot. I saw Mr. Charles Edward Newton yesterday through my binoculars over there at the football game at Wrigley Field, which the Mighty Monsters won, of course. Tell you all about that in the sports review here in just a moment. But I sort of talked myself out at that game yesterday. Wow. 7:27 the time, the temperature 40 degrees. And now the sports review.
We're done, Chicago Bears. Make every play clear the way to victory. Put up a fight with the might so fearlessly. We'll never forget the way you thrilled the nation with your determination. We're done, Chicago Bears, and let them know why you're wearing the crown. You're the pride and joy of Illinois, Chicago Bears. We're done.
Yes, Bear Down Chicago Bears. Boy, they sure did yesterday. This is the sports review here on the Art Hellyer Show for Crosstown Motors Ford Center at 3945 Archer Avenue between California and Western. Hey, they did it. Boy, if you were out there yesterday, you saw a tremendous game. The Bears in the first half were really something and just held off on the second half there with some beautiful defensive ball playing. And the Bears won their fifth straight game after losing their first three. We all know that. And they have now tied for the lead of the National Football League's Western Division. The Bears beat the Rams 24-3 to tie the Rams for first place. And boy, it was really a one-sided battle. Los Angeles never got inside the Bears' 22-yard line, and the field goal that the Bears did score came in the last 60 seconds of play in the ball game. As we said, that was the fifth straight victory for the Bears, who had lost their first three games. Now, the Bears next week will go up against the Detroit Lions, and Bears owner and manager George Halas says he expects his team to lose some of the four remaining games on their schedule. It's a real thrill to see Mr. Halas carried off yesterday in the shoulders of the Bear players at the end of the game, too. I'm just sorry they dropped him. The always pessimistic Halas says, "I still think this is too tough a league for anybody to think about going four games without losing. I think we'll lose two, and we could lose three or four." George, let's not talk that way. Howie, could I have the Sun-Times, please? Keep Cup's column. You read that. I just want to see what they say about the Bears here. Chicago's Bears, this is Bruce Morrison's column, scored a 24-3 victory over Los Angeles before 50,187 at Wrigley Field Sunday.
Oh, boy, they dropped George Halas back then.
At least they didn't drop kick him.
Art Hellyer in 1955 on WCFL in Chicago. In 1993, Art Hellyer is on WNIB with us this afternoon on our Those with the Days program, fresh from his broadcast this morning on WJOL 1340 in Joliet. We'll continue with our conversation with Art Hellyer in just another minute. Art Hellyer is with us this afternoon. Art, we have a few minutes left right before the old clock up on the studio wall.
I'm watching it with you.
Okay. You have, there was a time when you were literally racing from radio station to radio station in Chicago to do all kinds of programs. I mean, you do a quarter hour here or half an hour there, an hour here.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Well, back in the early 50s, I worked for a client. Well, I worked for Walgreens for one, but that was 8 to 8:30 in the morning, so no problem there. But the other major client I had was downtown Nash.
Mm-hmm.
Every Friday afternoon between 1 and 2, they would buy everything left on the weekend in Chicago.
Everything left on the weekend?
All the salespeople at the radio stations knew to call them between 1 and 2 on Friday afternoon, and they would buy everything left on the weekend at the stations. Often it would be as many as 200 quarter hours.
Oh my God.
I would get the list by 3 o'clock. I'd be over at Globe Transcription in the Carbide and Carbon building on the fifth floor there, Don Lavery. And I would spend the whole afternoon and evening turning out these discs in those days. And then I would run to the different stations and deliver the discs with the times they were to run. And I'd be on seven stations at a time. I'd do one live, and the other six would be on disc. And then I would run for, I would get off, for example, I'd be on WIND in the morning, 7-5 until 8, and then 8-5 until 9, WGN. Well, that wasn't anything. That was no problem at all. I just run across the street from the Wrigley building then to Tribune Tower in those days. Then from 9, then I go back to IND from 9:15 to 9:30. Then 10:05 to 11, I was on WMAQ. And Hugh Downs was my announcer in those days, by the way. And I remember in March of 1954, he told me he was going to New York to try out on a thing called the Home Show with Arlene Francis, and he'd be back the following weekend. Well, all he did was come back to move to New York. But then 11:05 till noon, I'd be on WAIT, 12:05 till 1 o'clock, the old WAAF, and on through the day like that. Well, I would be opposite myself on those discs. All those discs I would deliver the night before to the stations, but I would also bring a list of the times I would need the elevator operators to have an elevator at the floor of the Merchandise Mart for NBC, at the floor of Tribune Tower for GN and that sort of thing, so that they would have a list of when I would be arriving. I also hired Flash Cab, and I'd give them the list on Friday night of where they would have to be to pick me up, because I would get off one show, and often I would get off on the hour straight up and be starting the next one on the same hour. So they'd play a theme song, and my theme song was "Hi Ho, Hi Ho, It's Off to Work We Go," you know, from Walt Disney, the Seven Dwarfs, and they'd play that, and I'd come running in while that was playing, and then I'd end up at night with TV shows, And during the week, I had TV shows in Chicago. I'd have three or four a night. And during those movies in the 50s, each of our commercials would run 15 minutes on camera in those days, you know. And I would spend one night a week in Rockford and another night each week also in Milwaukee doing TV shows. And I'll never forget the station in Rockford. It was way out in the country, had an outhouse. And Rockford. And the salesperson who would sell the account would also be the cameraman and director on it. Yeah.
And what kind of clients were these doing 15 minutes?
Freezers, TV sets, vacuum cleaners, pots and pans.
That's when they would run the movie and take maybe two or three breaks in the movie.
Right.
And each break would be a long break.
15 minutes, setup, right?
Yeah. Well, now, when you were doing all of this running around from station to station, recording these things, delivering transcriptions, doing all of this stuff, were you doing this for love or money?
We weren't paid much money. Bill O'Connor Bill was doing that, too, at the same time. We'd often see each other, and Marty Fay was another, and Howard Miller. We'd often pass each other. We weren't doing it for much money. The money was very small. It really was. We were really doing it for the fact that it was love. It was love, and it was our job, and we were making a living.
It was what you did, right? It's what you wanted to do.
Sure. And even when TV came along, we just looked at it as we did with the radio, but then had a camera.
Yeah.
That was the only
difference. Had you always, as a youngster, wanted to be on radio?
I either wanted that or to be a baseball player. My dad even bought me a PA system when I was 10 years old at Allied Radio, which is still the greatest radio store ever.
Yeah.
And he bought me a PA system when I was just 10 years old. And I used to put the speakers up on the roof of the house in Hinsdale and broadcast to the whole neighborhood, and the police car would pull up, of course.
You started early with fighting with authority, right?
Yeah, I sure did. Yeah, I was only 10, so. Yeah. Right. But then when I was in the service, I played on the National Championship Air Force team in 1945 at Albuquerque, and I did have to make a decision. Did I want broadcast to go into broadcasting, or did I want to play baseball? And I was 22 years old. I got out of the Army and decided that's a little too old to be starting baseball. So I went to Radio Institute of Chicago, and Bob Cunningham was one of my teachers.
Oh, yes.
He was the program or the chief announcer at CBS. He liked my work, asked me if I'd go to work for a new radio station a friend of his was putting on the air, Jack Gelder in Charleston, West Virginia, and the rest is history.
you've had and are still having a wonderful career. You're happy with the stint you're doing now out in Joliet?
Yeah, very much so, because, as I say, I'm doing my show my way.
And it's not running around from station to station, and
no way.
A little lighter schedule. I know you have a tough back problem. You suffered an injury on a New Year's Eve some time ago. Through
a guy thought it'd be fun to slug me on a national audience, coast to coast on ABC
and,
TV.
I know for a great many. When was that?
New Year's Eve, 67.
Yeah, from all those years since then, you've really spent a lot of those years in pain.
Right.
But it hasn't dampened your enthusiasm and your talent and your imagination and your love of the business. And I want to thank you for being with us today. Thank you for our friendship. I never dreamed when I used to turn on the radio in the mornings on WCFL that I would be able to say, I always used to say, that's a guy I really like to listen to. But now I can say it's a guy I know and it's a friend of mine. And
we truly are good friends. Chuck and I talk very frequently on telephone calls and so on and so forth. And Chuck does an awful lot for radio here, and I'm very proud to know you.
Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Chuck.
Art Hellyer.